If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Dog Days of Summer CU podcast for Tuesday, July 30th, 2019, alongside recording producer Ian Ferguson. I'm Pat Contry. Oh, we got lots of fun stuff to talk about. Lots of Q&A. We'll talk about the Fortnite tournament results as the official PUBG gaming, modern gaming Fortnite podcast.
Battle Royale podcast.
PUBG modern gaming. We're talking about Doom with DRM. That's always fun. We'll be talking about discussion about NES values, blah, 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 blah. Q&A. It's a fun time. It's kind of a loosey-goosey podcast. First off, I will be at Missouri Game Con this weekend, August 3rd. That's going to be fun. I'll be there with Norm, the gaming historian, and friends. Go to mogamecon.com for more information. That's outside, about 20 minutes outside St. Louis. Oh, ghost phone's starting. That's always good. Please don't be an embarrassing voicemail. I don't have a student loan. Now I'm pissed. So this is what happens now. I get calls twice a week, three times a week. And that's not a real person. That's a robocall.
I'm aware.
And the one time I talked to someone for real, it was a call center in, I don't know, India, Pakistan. It was not in this continent. That's still fake, by the way, that call. She's like, pretends to be all trepid. So I talked to this person on the phone who insisted I had a student loan still. They were adamant. And I said, please take me off your list. I do not have a student loan. I pay my student loans off probably by 26 or so. They were paid off, like 12, 13 years ago. And she's like, and the person was like, oh no, you have student loans. I was like, okay. I haven't got anything in the mail. I think I would have heard about it by now. They would have garnished my wages. So there's so many robocalls now you get, more so, even on cell phones. But there are apps to help. I'm going to do a cheap plug, and this isn't paid. There's an app it's already cut down on my calls. On my cell, what is it called? Sorry, we're going off in a weird direction here. But these calls suck, and they're getting worse. And the do not call.gov thing does not work for this. So the app is called Call Protect, and I've downloaded it within the past week. I have way less. They like pre-screen the numbers. There's like a bunch of numbers that they're saying they identify these numbers as bullshit numbers. So they screen them before they get to you. I don't know how it works. It's like magnetism, but I've gotten less so far. And it's like a 4-star rating in the App Store. Anyway. Speaking of apps, because a couple people harassed me about the NES app, it's getting totally revamped. I don't want to talk about it until it's done, but that's why you haven't heard anything yet. The last developer, besides owing me over $3,000, totally dropped the project, and we'll talk about him soon enough in more detail, but it's getting totally redone from scratch. It begins with a J, his name, and it ends with Eri. So that's what we're talking about him
in detail. Little mouse!
The little mouse. Little mouse screwed Pat in the poocher.
Jerry was, when you're a kid, you don't know the dichotomy between the two of them. But
now it's Pat and Jerry.
It's like 50-50 on the show, but Jerry was really a jerk.
Sometimes Tom just wanted to relax and hang out. He didn't always want to just...
Just being a cat. Yes. Tom's doing what he needs
to do. Sometimes he's just doing nothing. Sometimes he gets angry and rambunctious like cats do. I like the ones where they were friends. I did. I didn't want to see Tom get his ass kicked all the time. They were funny, though.
Yeah.
The original ones from, the early 50s.
Yeah, I've got a DVD 40s, of 50s. Them. I think I've got, 35 episodes.
So for the first, 5 years, he got his ass kicked, and they became friends. And then they fought, the dog or whatever. The dog would always kick the shit out of Tom as well. I'm sorry. Anyway, so what was I saying? Robocalls and Tom and Jerry and my app. Speaking of that, the book, the Super Nintendo book, is, 97.9% finished. So that'll be done and going to print hopefully in a week or so, and get it out of my life. Then I become more of a gamer again.
Speaking of gamers, do you want to talk about the Eon N64?
We'll do that. We'll get back to the gamer stuff. So Eon sent us the N64 HDMI adapter.
Yes, we were sent an Eon N64 HDMI adapter review unit, and I took it home and tested it, put it through its paces. Couple things to say. I'll start.
Well, it upscales to what, 720p?
I believe it's 480.
Is it 480?
But let's double check that.
Okay, you go on. I'll check. You talk.
I'll go with the good first. It's very easy to use. You plug it in, add the HDMI cable onto the back, and you're off and going. It's simple. There's really no fussing with it. And it does. It clears up the picture.
It is 480p.
Okay. Yeah.
Zero lag image.
480p. Okay. So it really crisps up the image. It makes it look less like a Vaseline blob on your TV, which is the ideal end result of these things, is to clear it up.
So according to this, it brings the S video out and scales it. That's what it does. Okay. So that's going to be the cleanest image. Okay.
So in that regards, it works fantastic. It also has a button on the side that will, if you press the button on the side of the adapter, it'll apply...
Slick mode.
It'll apply a filter.
Slick mode, it's called.
To its credit, I have to say this. I've never liked the way filters look on anything that's doing, upscaling. I don't like filters on, the FrameMeister. When, video games get re-released and put out, like, old ones, there's usually all sorts of filters you can put over them. Mm-hmm. Haven't liked those. The filter on the Eon N64 adapter, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the system it's being used on. It could be but that filter, that slick mode, actually looks really nice.
It just unjaggies the edges, right?
Right. And like I said, normally when that is attempted, I really dislike it, but it works wonderfully on the N64 adapter. I played Pokemon Snap on it. WWE No Mercy on it. And Pokemon Snap, it looked great. It sharpened up the text and the critters. I can imagine that game would be very hard to play without some sort of HDMI solution or using it on a CRT TV. WWE No Mercy was sharper and cleaner.
That is Stone Cold's bald head look.
The thing is, I don't know that you necessarily want to see those models cleaner.
Sure. Which is the problem with N64 in general.
Yes. And it leads me to, my next statement. There's only so much you can really do to clean up the N64. You're not going to get the level of upgrade from the N64 adapter that you would have gotten, say, from their GameCube adapter.
Sure.
So, I think people should know that going in. If they don't know anything about the technical side of it, it's not going to suddenly make your N64 look amazing, but it is going to make it look good on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I have to mention that we're entering an era with Eon where other companies are starting to do comparable products. And you have things like the RetroTINK. You have the HDMI cables coming out, I believe, from Hyperkin.
Hyperkin and PoundTech started, and then Hyperkin started to do them.
So
you have others, the OSS you told me about?
Yes, the OSSC.
OSSC?
Yeah.
And you have mod kits, board kits. You can just internally mod your system.
I think
as well.
The board kit will probably go the way of the Dodo at this point.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a second, what Metal Jesus did, but yeah.
So, I mean, that's really where I'm going. This is more convenient and less hassle than a board mod. Now, I haven't had a chance to run a 64 through a RetroTINK, but is it really that much better between the Eon and the RetroTINK and other... And I have to admit here, I have to pull from other places because I didn't have everything to test it from. It appears that between the RetroTINK and the Eon adapter, that they're pretty similar. And I'd say it, the RetroTINK is a cheaper device.
And it's for every console.
Yeah, you can use it for most
component and compositing. Yeah. That's most retro gaming consoles.
So you can use it for those. We get to the point where the GameCube adapter came out at a time where that wasn't a super common thing. Also, you know, and so people bought it. It was plug and play. It was easy. But as we move on and as more companies start to release this sort of stuff, Eon, I think, is in danger of maybe losing that Cadillac designation.
Well, it's not.
I don't think you can get 150 for this.
It's not a novelty anymore when three or four different companies put out the same product.
Right.
So even if they were first to market with the GameCube one, what was that at this point? A year and a half ago, that came out a year and a half ago. Something like that. With the GameCube one, other companies follow suit. In the Poundtech cables, there's now four or five different ones. Hyperkin is putting out their versions, which are probably somewhat similar. There's only so many ways you can put out the same product. So like when I saw Metal G's video and he compared, he had a great job comparing four things: the Ultra HDMI upgrade kit, which is a board kit, and obviously that's the best one. Like that upgrades to 1080p total. It looks gorgeous. It looks great. Then he did the Retro Tink, which is like you said, the all-in-one one, the Eon one, and then the Hyperkin cheap cables for like 30-40 bucks. And obviously the Hyperkin ones look the worst. The colors are off, but yeah, it's only 30 bucks. You get what you pay for. The Retro Tink, which is $100, which is a device I didn't know existed before, looked to me exactly the same. I was really trying to see the difference between that and the $150 Eon one. So now you have, and like you said, the OSSC device, which is probably a better version of something the RetroTINK does, correct? It's a little bit pricier.
I don't know, but it's another one of those.
It's another one of those, like, you know, just HDMI converters, you know, analog to HDMI converters. You have so many different companies doing this that there's so much competition in the marketplace that prices come down. And unless you really want a reason to buy an adapter for each individual device, at the end of the day, you'll be spending potentially several hundred dollars to do that versus just buying one device for $100 to do something very similar.
Right.
So to me, that's where we're at in the marketplace with this. I think $150 to do one device, while it could have been kitschy and cute originally, by the third or fourth product, how many people are willing to do that?
I think there's definitely a market, and I could almost...
It's a lot of money.
I'm not, there's a market. I think it's gamers with a bit more money. There is a market for something that is simply take it out of the box, plug it in. You're literally playing in 2 seconds, and you're not screwing with anything.
Sure, but leave it in the back of your console.
Yeah, but sure. is the price difference worth that right now? Is it worth a few less minutes worth of work?
Well, if it's a $50 device, that's one thing. $150,
right?
I expect it to be the best of its type, which in this class it's not. It's the Ultra HDMI kit. But I expect it to be significantly better than the competition, and it's not.
Well, what I mean, we had kind of mentioned this before. If the Eon 64 HD was $100 and the RetroTINK was $100, I think you would still have some people who wanted to buy the Eon.
Sure.
For ease. At $150, it's tough. And I don't want to sound too hard. It's a good product. It does what it's supposed to do. It was easy to use. And like I said, it looked very nice. I just don't know if the market will hold that price any longer.
Yeah. I'm in for this RetroTINK. Like, I had no idea this was really a thing. And if it's simple, it gets latency about 53 microseconds. So that's like half of a tenth of a second. That I can still beat Mike Tyson with that, I think. But I still
I hope so, because I told you that my FrameMeister had 44, and you were like, that's not doable.
No. I didn't say that. Well, the TV adds more on top of that.
Mine is really... Yeah, okay.
You can never get rid of lag from a TV.
Yes.
But I'm sure the NES Classic, I can't beat Tyson on my TV. Maybe with my Samsung, but there's lag on the NES Classic. That's built into it, I believe, with the emulation, whatever else. But no, for Tyson, I think once you get over a tenth of a second, you're toast. I think that's how much it is with that. Or definitely 2/10 of a second, you're done. But I think a tenth is where the cutoff is. So anyway, all right, Ian, thanks for the review. You can give me back the review whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
You'll probably play it more than me because Pat's not a gamer. So when we did that topic, it was supposed to be tongue-in-cheek. You know, Ian, you know, sometimes likes to punch me in the gut. On the podcast, that's fine. I can take it.
You do the same.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not saying I didn't chastise you for it. I'm just saying you like to do it. You're smiling right now. Think about the next time you're going to do it. The comments were funny on the YouTube, by the way. Because, by the way, YouTube comments are the most clean and sensible people around.
Yes.
I don't want to talk about most of them. One person compared me to a reseller that just plays games to sell and make sure they work in something. I'm like, that's a bridge too far, but okay. This
seems
one
like a reach.
That's a reach. This is funny because I couldn't tell if this was a troll or true, but it's probably a combination of the two. This is from I don't usually go over. I'm not actually going to go after this person in the comments. I'm just going to point it out. I might go after him because people think like this. This is T. Byram. Generally, gamers are people who not only play games for fun, but play games, if not on a daily basis, then at least 3 to 5 times a week. For fun, playing a game because you need to write a review of that game does not make you a gamer, even if you enjoy playing the game, because you only play that game because you needed to write a review of that game for work purposes. So, Pat, that's capitalized. So, Pat, answer these questions if you want an answer. If you answer yes to at least 3 out of the 5, then you are still a gamer. Ready, Ian? This is a quiz. Number one, do you play games 3 to 5 times a week that in no shape or form is tied to your career, uppercase? Number two, do you have a game / games that you play at least a few times a year, even though you have beaten the game more than twice, not just once, more than twice, because it is so fun to play? Number three, have you beaten any game in the last month? Again, not for any kind of work purposes. Number four, are there games that you have played in the last month just to relax? Number five, are there games that you still consider yourself to be an expert at? Capital, expert at. By expert, I mean a game that you could pick up right now and beat the game without dying. Or if it is a racing game, then you could take first place in every single race.
I'm glad the racing game clause made it in
the
there.
The racing game clause? So does that mean racing is not a real game genre? So, Ian, by those stringent measures, could you at least hit 3 of those 5?
2.
Which 2 could you hit?
Whatever the first one was. And then
at least 3 to 5 times a week. Okay.
I mean, probably 3 to 4 times a week.
Okay, so you're gamer number
well,
one.
Well, actually, lately, because of Mr. Driller, I have been playing every day. And then
for a career, though.
No, it's not a career. Okay. And then
you're not relaxing.
For vengeance. And then I do play games to relax. Yes.
Okay, so that's 2. But you couldn't hit a 3rd. You're not a gamer.
I didn't beat a game within the past month. I am not an expert at any game.
Okay,
was the 5th one that I missed?
Are you an expert at that you can pick up and play right now? Or if it is a racing game that you can take first place?
That's 4.5. Okay, all right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
can't.
So number one, do you play games 3 times a week? Yeah, actually, yes, because I count mobile.
Mobile counts.
So I
it's
play
a
games
fucking game.
Every day in my mobile. Even if I'm on the toilet, that counts. If I'm playing Zynga Poker for 20 minutes in a tournament, that counts.
Start playing Pokemon Go.
No, poker, not Pokemon Go.
I'm saying you should.
Do you have a game that you play at least a few times? How much time do you have to... Okay, a game that you've beaten at least twice that I'm going to play at least a few times a year to beat it again or play it. How much time do you have to do that? I don't know. That's kind of weird.
And I have a feeling he's not like talking retro games. Like,
but that's just...
I might beat DuckTales 3 times a year, but that's, you know, because I have...
But you have to do it at least a few times a year and you have to have beaten it more than twice. Okay, that's weird. That's like it has to be like an NES game because a game you can play like
in
20
minutes.
I feel
like I need a fucking abacus to calculate whether I'm a gamer.
Like Russian Attack. Russian Attack. I had a dream about a few nights ago. I can go back and beat that game in like 20 minutes. That's what I can go back to. Are there any games that you played in the last month just to relax? Yes, I play poker to relax on my phone. I actually do, even though it's analytical. And number 5, though. Are there games you consider yourself to be an expert at? Absolutely, I'm an expert at certain games, like Contra. So according to this definition, I am a gamer, because I hit 3 out of 5. I'm a gamer, Internet, according to T. Byram. So there, I've worked against the system. So then I responded, tongue-in-cheek, I see you pulled this definition straight from Merriam-Webster. They actually replied back, I actually pulled it straight from my ass, with a wink, so... Well, that's why I couldn't tell. But there are some people that think like this.
Mm-hmm.
That are gatekeeping.
So many of them, in fact, that if this is a joke, I couldn't tell
I couldn't tell if this was a joke. But I am a gamer according to this definition. So, ha, Ian. ha, I'm more a gamer than you are, according to that definition. Because I am an expert, so that makes me a gamer by default.
Wear that badge proudly. Wear that badge proudly.
Okay, yeah. Absolutely. And real quick, I've been enjoying on Amazon Prime, which everyone should have because of the cheap shipping, but they throw in, you know, video stuff. The Boys, which is a Garth Ennis graphic novel. There's 8 episodes. I watched 4. Stars Carl Urban, who's fantastic in everything. And I think it's been getting good reviews. I've been spoiler free. I'll try to keep this mostly spoiler free. I've only seen 4 episodes. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, Vani wants to watch it.
It is the best superhero deconstruction that I've ever seen on film. What is that?
I don't know.
Superman theme? What the hell was that?
It was the default. The default
student loan call?
No.
So
default alarm.
So The Boys is about a reality where superheroes exist, and they kind of exist. They don't explain where they get their powers from. I think they're born with them, so they're kind of mutiny in that they don't explain it.
They drink lots of milk.
Yes, they drink lots of milk. So there's definitely when I say definitely, this is heavily influenced by obviously Watchmen, which is the original sort of deconstruction, but it's done in a modern way, the deconstruction. So in this universe, Ian, there's a superhero team called the Seven that are basically owned by a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So they pump out the movies, they pump out theme parks with them, toys, and everything else, but they're under basically a salary, and they're told what to do by the corporation.
Okay.
So they only save, you know, save people when they can get on camera for social media points. They're always looking at, you know, what demographics are following you. Oh, you're doing well with, you know, white people in the Midwest. Oh, you're doing good with this ethnic group. And they're always telling them about, like, what you should do. And on its surface, it seems insane, but the more I thought about it, that could probably be the most accurate depiction of how, if superheroes could somehow exist, that's probably what it would turn into. Corporate interests.
Corporate
interests to not only keep you under control and pay you tons of money, because you're not making millions of dollars yourself being a superhero. So someone sponsoring you, but then telling you, you have to do this, you have to do that. No, you can't get involved with this. But it's done in such a... Well, obviously, it's funny and clever, and obviously, they all have problems. So when I say it's heavily influenced by Watchmen, yeah, because they all have fucked up problems to begin with. But even the corporations called the Vought Corporation, Adrian Veidt had his own corporation in Watchmen. He was sort of the corporate hero, but he ran his own business. He had his own toy, and he had his own, like, health things, fitness line, and things like that. So it's obviously heavily influenced. It's gory as hell in terms of the violence, because, you know, it's like, well, if a superhero existed, he can just punch a hole through your chest, and that's basically what they do.
Well, and Vani was I haven't read it, but Vani was telling me the comic book was pretty gory as well.
Yeah, it's very, like, it's gory, like a fucking brain popping out of a guy's head gory.
Oh,
that happens. Spoiler.
Well, I want to watch that.
Yeah, but it's really funny. It's intelligently done. Yeah, check it out. I didn't have high expectations for it, but the Spice Girls playing on the trailer sort of sold me on it. And there is a cool little speech about the Spice Girls, because the Boys is a group of these 4 guys that come together to try to right the wrongs of the superheroes and expose them and potentially kill them. And so it's just a good show. So check it out there. All right. Ian.
Yes.
You know we're the official Battle Royale podcast, correct?
We are. So we've got to talk about...
We have to.
Fortnite's first big tournament.
And we talked about Epic Games rolling out tons of cash for this last year.
We did. We talked about it early on, and boy, did they actually roll out that cash. So, basically, Kyle Booga Giersdorf here, a 16-year-old, came in first and took home $3 million in grand prize money.
$3 million.
We'll talk more about him in a minute, but I would like to mention, he's not the only one who went home with cash.
Real quick, that's the biggest payout ever.
It's the biggest payout ever.
For esports.
Absolutely the biggest. In second place, 24-year-old Harrison Salm Chang won $1.8
million. Wow.
Epic Whale took third place.
I like that.
It says he has not publicly disclosed his name. Took $1.2 million. Fourth place, Nate Creo Co. took 18. He was 18. He took $1.05 million. And then it says lower, there was a fifth place winner.
They got like 900 grand
or
something.
It was South America. Yeah, 13-year-old Thiago Lap won
900
million.
13!
No one in the tournament period, walked out of there with less than $50,000. Everyone who participated, this is the...
It wasn't off the street. You had to qualify.
Everyone who participated in the games on Sunday. So if you made it to Sunday, my bad. So if you made it to Sunday, if you were playing on Sunday, including those who placed last with no points at all, took home at least $50,000 for playing.
Wow.
This makes it one of the biggest tournaments in esports so far. I'd love to know what was bigger, and there's going to be more this year.
Yeah, so this is what happens when you have a game that's a mass success that Epic can just throw tons of money at, because there's no way they would get the sponsorship money from regular sponsors. There's just no way they can justify it. It's insane. There's no tournament that will give you $50,000 for coming in last.
Right.
Doesn't happen with poker.
I was going to say, I can't think of literally anything that's going to give you $50,000 for coming in last.
The World Series of Poker is $10,000 to enter, and only, I think, like 15% win any money. So
really
85% you lose your $10,000. When you get down to like 15% or so, 20%, then you start making 10-20 grand, you start making money at that point. So that's usually how most tournaments work. Like, the most people don't get much at all. $50,000 for obviously got to qualify, but $50,000 just for qualifying, holy crap, that's a good payout, Epic.
Yeah,
how long will this last?
So, there was an interesting quote from the fellow who took home second place. That was the Harrison Chang. And he said something about, I can't find the exact thing, but he mentioned that, so basically he was the oldest or one of the... He was one of the oldest competing on Sunday.
It was like 25, probably.
Yeah.
26, and he's old.
24. He's 24. He was one of the oldest competing, and he said... It's great representing the old dudes. Experience and composure trump everything, but Fortnite is a young man's game.
Everything's a young man's game, though, because by the time you're in your 20s, you got a job. You can't practice playing Fortnite right. 10 hours, 12 hours a day. When you're 13, you could do that, especially in the summer, or when you're on vacation, or if you're in college, you come back from class and play games. Once you get to a certain age, you have much less time to be a gamer, and especially professionally. This is why it's not happening now, it's starting to happen. We're going to get into a weird spot years from now, I think, where when stuff like this happens more and more, you're going to have, this is all over major news. CNBC running this, local affiliates running this story.
It's a $3 million pool, not even a pool, $3 million prize.
I had our rep for our podcast advertiser tell this to me on the phone. Did you hear about this $3 million Fortnite thing? So now that this happens, Ian, you're going to have a bad effect of parents. We talked this before about when it came up with, train your kid to be better at games and pay.
I was going to bring it back up, yeah.
Now you have a real incentive saying, wow, Timmy, you can win $3 million playing Fortnite. Don't play this other game. Play this free game and just play that. Or... it'll encourage kids to think that they could do this as well when only 0.01% have a shot to win money. But you have millions of people playing it. But this is exactly what Epic wants, because this is how the game stays relevant and how they can make, $100 million a year on microtransactions.
You show
this.
A few people making millions, which for Fortnite is nothing. That's a drop in the bank. I think it's supposed to generate something like 5 mil a day, if not. It's got to be more than that. But... So it's a drop in the bank, but yeah, you put four or five people up there who have all made close to a million or much more, and...
Oh, it can happen to me. I can do this.
Right, and that gets people right back into
playing.
People who haven't been playing for a couple of months, I bet just out of curiosity's sake, are at least going to go back and play a few more games.
I can play pro baseball and make millions of dollars. I can be a singer. The difference between that is those are skills you can carry with you. And you can take things from them, or you can still persist. For a game like this, Fortnite, we don't know if this is going to be gone in 2 years. We have no idea. 3 years, this could be done. Or a different iteration of it, at least, that Epic will put out. They'll put out a sequel, Fortnite 2.
Call of Duty is nowhere near as big as it was. Unreal is dead. I mean, these things have problems.
There's a shelf life.
Yeah.
The good thing is that now that there's been such a game, this is a game that's only been out for less than 2 years still. I think it was in beta 2 years ago. At this point.
October will be 2 years,
yeah.
If I recall.
So this is insane, but Epic has such a weird head start in terms of money that they can keep tossing money at this that they have in the vault in order to keep people playing it by giving these payouts to people. They're in a unique position to do this. But how long could it last? I have no idea. It's strange to think about, but this could be a dominating esport just because of the prize money alone. It could just, obviously it's a fun game, people like it, it would have made the money if it wasn't fun. But it can now perpetuate, maybe, self-perpetuate, based upon Epic just tossing millions of dollars into these tournaments, which they plan on doing. What do they commit? $100 million they committed? Is that what we talked about last year?
I believe so.
$100 million.
So, commitment. Let's see here. They made $2.4 billion in 2018 on Fortnite.
That's not counting the first 7 months of this year. So that could be another billion.
Yeah. So I was trying to, there was a stat going around for a while saying how much it made a day, and that's what I was trying to figure
out. So $100 million a month, that's actually too low.
However, yeah,
when it'd be 170 or so.
When Fortnite launched on the iPhone, it reportedly was making $2 million a day just on the phone.
These are microtransactions. These aren't even necessary.
They threw this tournament at like no loss to them.
No, there's no loss. $100 million, that's nothing to them. They can throw half a billion at this over the next 5 years, and
yeah,
and it's marketing. It's great the publicity, that the fact that random ass people in the middle of nowhere know about this game and know about this tournament, that more than paid for whatever prize money pool was total for this. What was it, if it was 10 million, whatever, that's nothing compared to the publicity they got from this. This is the smartest thing Epic could have possibly done. I'm just talking about long-term. How is this bad for gaming in general, potentially? If all players are funneled to play this one game because they think they should, because they think they have a chance at this?
Well, I think, you know, at some point, you know, it'll get too packed and people will just realize that it's overcrowded.
It's probably overcrowded right now. Yeah. It has to be.
And they'll try to find, you know, the next thing. But yeah, Epic is in that unique position. I can't think of any other game right now or on the horizon that could even come close to throwing this much cash at it.
No.
I mean, League of Legends and Heroes of the Storm weren't throwing anything near that, and those were like the popular...
Well, Heroes of the Storm is going to be done. Right?
Well, it is done.
Yeah, but League of Legends at least is still around. Right?
What were StarCraft tournaments like in terms of payouts? I mean, I know those got pretty big.
I don't know. But
it's the start. I mean, this is...
But at least those were organic, though. Those weren't like money just thrown into it to perpetuate them.
Sure.
I don't know how they did in South Korea. I'm sure that's where they probably did the most. I doubt that it was 50 grand just to qualify. Hell, I'll get into it. You want me to be a gamer, Ian? If you want 50 grand to qualify, I'll play some Fortnite. Some of my Unreal skills will transfer over to Fortnite, right? Some of them? Well, twitchy skills. They're all twitchy shooter skills, I guess.
Sure.
I never liked third-person shooters, though. Is there a first-person mode of Fortnite? Can I do a first-person? No?
No.
They want to see you build stuff?
It's third.
That's actually brilliant, too, though, for all the streamers and playback, because you see the person moving around and getting killed. It's actually brilliant. Everything about Fortnite, how they designed it, is brilliant.
Well, also,
it's goofy nerf violence. You know,
if there was a first-person mode, you wouldn't be able to stare at your sweet costume that you paid money for all the time.
Seeing? They thought about it. Epic thought about it. They can't think about a new Unreal game, but they thought about everything else.
Yeah.
How about this, Epic? You throw 1% of this prize money into finishing the alpha version of the Unreal tournament you have that's been done for like 2 years. How about that? All right. Ian, speaking of professional gaming.
Well,
money being made through gaming.
So Team Fortress 2, that stalwart game from Valve. It was a team-based shooter, and a class-based team-based shooter. It was one of the first. It was certainly one of the most popular.
It's been out for, like, what, 9-10 years?
It's been out for, I would say, slightly over 10 years.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a bit. I want to say at least 2007, maybe. Anyways, it's been around forever. A lot of people cut their teeth on it, and then people started to move on to other things as games came out, like Overwatch is one. CSGO, you know, these are games that kind of pulled from Team Fortress 2 after it had a long day in the sun. But it's still popular enough. And in 2009, they added cosmetics. Most people, I think, at this point, probably have seen at least one meme or something about it. But you could get hats for your characters. Just to put on hats. And there's all sorts of weird ones, and you could get free ones for certain events.
Flower Pothead and
you can Derby. Earn... you can earn crates and open them, and they'll give you hats. And there's a rarity system to the hats. And the highest level is unusual. Well, there was a glitch discovered. Was that yesterday morning?
It'd be Friday.
Okay, so it was a few days ago. So this is probably taken care of. But so something happened. There was a glitch where the crates started spawning unusual quality items. Remember, that's the highest level, rarest of the rare,
uncommon item.
Apparently at an incredibly quick pace. That's what it's saying here in this Kotaku article. So all of a sudden, Team Fortress 2 items have flooded the community marketplace where people buy and sell these things, like skins or whatever, essentially. So you can buy and sell these hats. It's crazy because prices of crates right now are jumping up. So like if you have crates to sell... you can sell those
for... You can sell unopened crates.
You can sell... it looks like you can sell the unopened crates for higher.
It's like selling a baseball card pack.
Yeah. So you can sell the unopened crates for higher, but it's brought the unusual item listing, like item prices, down.
So if people are selling the individual stuff they opened, being that the stuff is no longer as rare as it used to be because people are unopening them at such a weird rate, that price has gone shooting down, but the packs themselves, the loot boxes themselves... have gone up.
Yeah, from people who want to open them. So the example they use here is that, so marketplace pricing history, crates have been selling for pennies. But now they're getting, now depending on their possible contents, they're up to as much as 13 per crate. Some players are reporting making hundreds or even thousands of dollars in just a couple of days from crates that have been sitting around. And then here's the example for items. An example of an item, the unusual Dragonborn helmet, which is based on Skyrim. It's a Skyrim helmet. In the past, three had sold total.
Three. Out of this big game, three. There was three of them.
Three on the marketplace.
Okay.
In the past week, a grand total of three. Sorry.
Okay.
In one day alone, this would have been Friday, 122 sold. With the price dropping from between 25 and 44 to between 6 and 7.
Can I just say how obviously Steam makes money off all this loot box stuff with these marketplaces and skins, and that's why they're getting sued. Remember for the Counter-Strike CS:GO skin
stuff,
things,
yes.
Because they're allowing this with their API to enable this. How stupid it is to have a marketplace for digital items, but they. People are paying for it. I mean, people are making money.
At some point, I have to sit back and just
marvel at the capitalism.
Capitalism, but also, it's not our world. I don't understand it. I don't need to understand it. I'm sure to them it makes them happy. Well, so spend the money on what you want. But yes, the idea of buying a digital hat on a marketplace, like if I really like a game that I'm playing on a console, I will. Like, as a tip, I will sometimes consider buying, like, say, a fighting game, a color pack, or a $5 costume pack. Throw the money into, like, the small developers. Plus, I like it, so I'll use it. But this gets out of control.
But this is now encouraging people to play this with to try to get this to make their own money on it. That's the difference. This is creating an ecosystem that's weird, and I'm glad some of these prices crashed, because now it's just funny to me that happened. But now, what are they? Are they just random item drops? In Team Fortress, or random boxes that drop?
I can't tell you exactly.
Are they just random item drop system? Is a process? Okay, it's a random item that gets dropped to you. Okay. So you have...
People getting
random boxes. They decide to open them or not, I guess. And they can sell them or just sell the contents. But this is almost like the counterstrike, the counterpoint of Epic, where Epic, it's like, play this game to get better to make money. Now it's... with Team Fortress, play this game to randomly get an item that you could sell. It's another way to get people to play it with having a marketplace that exists.
So I'm not sure yet if they've fixed it, but what they definitely did do was
they had to have fixed
it. Disabled inventories so players can't buy and sell. They don't know if they're going to wipe out those hats or what they're going to do, but... I'm even checking right now. I don't see any news update that says it's fixed and it's reinstated, but they definitely shut that down in the way they could to kind of try to nip it in the bud. But I guess it took them a while to get to it.
This is so dirty. Valve said on Twitter, we should have an update in the next few hours. So Valve creates a marketplace. They make money. God, the whole thing's fucking dirty. Once you get to this point, it's dirty to me. This is beyond just buying stuff for your personal enjoyment. Once you get into a marketplace for digital items, and you have a company that runs, you know, that runs the storefront.
I mean, that's really what it is. You open it, and you're opening a package, and you see what you get, and then you try to sell the ones that are worth something.
Okay, great. That's fun.
FlexPro Meals is a meal delivery company that sends healthy pre-made meals to your doorstep. Their goal isn't give you salad, but epic recipes, entrees you may have grown up on that they make healthier versions of. Eating healthy is a lifestyle change, not a two-week gimmick. Wow. So it's their responsibility to go the extra mile, giving us the most value with realistic and tasty meal options at a good price.
FlexPro Meals offers a weight loss fat trimmer plan and their bulkier lean muscle larger portion plan. Yeah. Some of their most popular meal entrees are smoked brisket max, one of my favorites, the breakfast burrito. I had it last night, and I'm getting hungry. The grilled fish and chips, which is relatively new.
It's good.
It's good. That's a good, solid one.
It's rocketed up my list.
It's going up your top 10 FlexPro meal list. And there's more. And what I like about FlexPro Meals is that they change their recipes every few months, and they swap out things. So now they have, I think I told you about, they have a turkey burger now with like bacon they didn't have before. They're constantly changing it up and doing it. Or if you just want the standard like grilled chicken and sweet potatoes, it's a staple, get you through the day. It's healthy with veggies. They got that for you too.
So they've got an offer for you.
I do.
20% off your first order. Go ahead and use code CUPODCAST when you visit FlexPro Meals. 20% off with CUPODCAST.
At FlexProMeals.com. We're all modern gaming news right now, Ian, because I didn't expect to see the original Dooms in the news ever again.
But here we have them. Bethesda, who currently owns the Doom games, the Doom IP, or is at least publishing them for id, released the first three Doom games are all going to be released. People started to download them on the Switch, and I think it was on the other systems too. And you were greeted with a login prompt where you had to put in an email. Yes, you had to put in an email address, which upset many people because why are you throwing that onto a game that, you know, it had no internet restrictions or requirements back when it came out. So if you had an account, you were supposed to put your email in. If you didn't, they made you create an account before you could play. With Doom 1 and 2, you only needed to log in, I believe, once with the account and you were fine. But for Doom 3, I believe they were saying you have to log in each time. It's just weird. So Bethesda did eventually take this away after backlash. You can now sign in if you want to. It's optional. And you will get... by doing so, you will earn rewards for the upcoming Doom Eternal. But you look at this and you have to wonder how they thought that would go over well. My argument here is, why in the fuck would I want to pay to be on your mailing list? Which is, to me, what it boils down to. Why am I buying a game and then you're making me give you an email address so you can send me shit that I don't want?
Sure.
I'm not doing that. That's fucked up.
What are the perks of signing up for this?
I don't think they've necessarily come all the way through with it yet, but I read it was somewhere that it was, basically it could be used towards Doom Eternal.
Like, I got a sticker and a newsletter mailed out, at least?
Yeah.
You got a Wally Bear sticker and newsletter?
So I'm just double checking. So, yeah, lots of memes. Bethesda update. Bethesda says the login was meant to be optional and that it'll be adjusted. The Bethesda login requirement was included for the Slayers Club to reward members for playing the classic Doom games. I believe the Slayers Club is related to the modern Doom games.
Slayers Doom Club. Games. What do you get in the Slayers Club? I'll look that up here. The Slayers Club is Love Doom joined the club. Create a free Slayers Club account and join the first official Doom fan club. The club will provide unique benefits, exclusive opportunities, and bring the best of Doom to fans in the world. What do I get? You can earn points by visiting the forum.
Oh, I love points. What do I get with the points?
Read and comment on a news article. Share Doom content in-game community events, submit your fan art for points, Ian, and watching the latest Doom videos, I guess through the slayersclub.bethesda.net. And there's already fan art gallery. There's trending topics in the forum. Join the there's a community challenge. How many chainsaw kills can the community get? And they've gotten 4.4 million, Ian. That's on here. Okay, top contributors. What do I get? You want me as part of the community? You want me to play your game? There's a Discord. Do I get any rewards? What are the rewards? How it works?
Points.
Points for what? Can I get like a costume? Can I get a Team Fortress hat?
Points, man.
You get okay, there's
get the high score.
There's ranks, number of points. You can get badges. It looks like for the game, you can get like the Hellwalker little stamp.
So I feel like it's probably like more of a competitive hub where you can get the stats and compare yourself to other players. And
digital rewards?
That's all well and good higher if ranks. That's what you want, but don't make me sign up for it because I know it's not just for that. I'm going to get other shit too.
It's digital content. You can win physical prizes and merch.
Okay, so
there's giveaways they do.
That's cool. Like I said, I'm all for that. If they got
a Doom 25 Switch, looks pretty cool. There's a cover on it.
If a publisher or a developer wants to do this sort of stuff, I'm all for it. People are going to take advantage of it, and it's going to be fine. But don't force me into your fan clubs.
Okay.
I don't even open my fucking mail that I get at home anymore.
Just to warn you guys, when the NES app gets redone, there will be a login, but it'll be optional, and it's not. We don't get your information. It's for a cloud service, so you can save your data, but it won't be required.
You should find a way for them to be able to earn points.
Yes, Ian. But again, it's not. I'm going to get shit when this app is a living nightmare. Not to make it about the app again, but there will be a login screen when you turn it on.
Just give people the points. They'll be fine. People love points. Collecting points.
Points you can like earn an NES card, or you can earn a lock of my hair.
How many
the
points?
The more you log into the NES guide app. All right, well, that's silly. I hope that was just an error, not something that the PR people would be stupid to think that, you know, to force someone to
error.
Do that.
Error.
I am error.
Did you hear about that weird error that happened with I think it was the police in Texas or something? They announced that they were going to be pulling people over for good driving and giving them coupons to Circle K for a free drink.
Was that a couple years ago? A while ago, I heard about that.
Well, it came up again the other day, and they backpedaled. They were like, no.
That could be the worst possible fucking idea on the planet.
It's illegal, for one.
To pull someone over to tell them, hey, here's a coupon. People be like, ah, you know, ah.
And then like immediately after, it's like, no, they won't be pulling people over. They'll just be looking for ways to engage pedestrians on the street and talk about safe driving. Well, it's like, no, you know what? Just fucking leave me alone.
I don't need your free whatever Circle K Slurpee they have that badly. What is
like,
the Circle K Slurpee?
That was an error on our part. We said the wrong thing. It's like, no, just like Bethesda,
you know what is?
You said something and you just can't own your fucking mistake. Okay. Just be like, my bad, that was a horrible idea.
If you've never worked in corporate, some of you have. The way these ideas come about is you get people that have to justify a job, that get into a meeting with lots of people. They get in such a fervor to push an idea. This is my idea. It's going to be great. Everyone's going to love me. This is why I get paid a salary. People don't stop and think about how is this going to be interpreted by the masses. Not how could the best version of this idea be interpreted in my head, the cleanest version, but how in reality, in function, how will this idea work? And how it will be interpreted by people that aren't a part of the company. And people don't think about this. People don't think outside their own asshole about how things work in the real world. That's how these ideas get put out without people thinking about them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's insane that it keeps happening. All the money gets put behind marketing campaigns. You hear about commercials every other week that, oh, this is great. What was the one? Oh, yeah, it was like the 23andMe commercial that was like a slave romance. This like commercial was done with probably $1 million put in this commercial, and it was like, oh, let's figure out how my DNA. And it was literally like the romantic, I'm in love with a slave and I'm taking the slave out. And it's like that probably happened. This is not the look you want in a commercial in 2019, where like this is to push your DNA. You know what I mean? Like, so these ideas happen, and lots of money and time get put in these ideas that end up being horribly received by a mass audience. You didn't hear about this one? It happened like 4 months ago.
I just didn't look into it. But I was zoning out because hearing any more of it was just going to make my head explode.
It's something you would have saw probably on Chappelle's Show or on Key and Peele. and it was like a real commercial. Anyway, Ian, that was a fun topic, but that's how bad ideas come to light.
All right.
So we got a Patreon poll topic. Ian, how do you access the Patreon poll, which you're going to do a writing for hopefully today?
Almost fucked that up.
Oh, wow.
Patreon.com/CU podcast.
So you've regressed.
Go.
You were on point, and then you've regressed now the past few weeks. All right, so we have a poll topic in third place, 16%. These are like two good topics now that are getting kicked out every week by a good one. 16%, that's Ross Perot in 92. When will GameStop stop accepting PS3, 360, Wii, and Wii U game systems for trade? In second place at 20%, what would your ideal game collection consist of if price was no object? And in number one, what are the most common collector's edition goodies put in the free bin at your game store? Ian?
Didn't we say yesterday that this was the one that absolutely was not going to win?
Well, we don't know what the poll topic's going to be. We don't control how the voting goes.
No.
We're not influencing the voting.
The most common stuff.
Most common stuff.
Let's just talk about what ends up in the free bin, but I'll get to some of the most. So we'll
don't take the free bin, by the way.
Yeah, the bin itself is not free. It's a bin that's holding free stuff. obviously Guitar Hero controllers.
Atari Hero, you say? Guitar.
Guitar Hero controllers.
Because Corey said Atari.
Not really collector's edition stuff, but definitely what we see. We see a lot of that in there. But it's the stuff that everyone thinks they want, and they buy collectors. I've seen more, like, little statues and...
The Joker statue from Arkham Asylum.
Batman Batarang has been in the...
An actual Batarang?
Yeah, the Batman Batarang's been in there. Call of Duty big boxes with, like the big books and stuff like that. Those will often go in the free bin if there's, like, a lot of times people will bring them in and be like, can I get anything for this? I'm like, no. So the game will go on the shelf. All the goodies will go in the free bin. We've had three of those remote control cars from Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2.
I took one. Yeah. Remember?
Yeah. Oh,
I was excited. I was like, it's in the garage now, but I took one. One of the rubber treads has to be replaced, but I took one.
So Pat's well aware of the free bin. Pat's partaken of the free
I've
bin.
I've partaken of the free bin like once or twice. That was I think I might have took a little DS case 10 years ago or whatever. But
The Aliens Colonial Marines collector's edition with the alien statue has shown up 5 or 6 times.
It's a nice statue, at least.
I thought it was, so I took it home once, you know, because we just kept fucking seeing them. Then I sold it at Phoenix last year for $5, because it's just like...
Oh, I remember it was big, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty
you
nice
carded
one.
A huge statue to sell for $5.
I had the space.
Sold the store for $5. No? Free bin?
We've had, like, the Bethesda Collector's Edition stuff. We've had the Fallout New Vegas cards come in a few times. I always thought those cards were cool-looking, but they annoy me because they have different backs. There's, like, I think 4 different types of backs it could be. It's meant to look like a deck of cards that was arranged from, you know, multiple partial decks.
Uh-huh.
But that still gives you some idea, if you've used that deck of cards long enough, about what card someone may be holding. So that drives me insane. That's a lot of it is, like, we do have, every once in a while, we'll throw demo discs in there. Most loose games that are actually games, we've had some really good ones, including, like, Persona 4, we'll throw in a dollar bin. DVDs end up. Movies, DVDs, and PC games. Lots of PC games. Matter of fact, I just threw a decent stack of PC games in there 2 days ago.
Now, you can still use them? Or they have the codes? Are they like 90s or 2000s? Once you get the 2000s, a lot of those you can't use anymore.
More recent ones like Far Cry 4 and shit like that, so I don't know.
Well, those are tied usually to like accounts or to codes.
Yeah.
Serials. But whatever, if you want a disc, take the disc.
Take the disc and, I don't know, find your serial. Like your Captain Crunch. DVDs. DVDs will come in and get thrown in there. I made a post a couple weeks ago about a copy of Johnny English that stayed in the bin for, I think it ended up being 3 weeks. Other things came and went in the bin, and everyone took them. But no one took Johnny English on DVD. So
is that bad a movie? That's the Mr. Rowan, Bean, Rowan Atkinson as like James Bond sort of thing.
I have no idea if it's bad. I just have no interest in reading it.
All right, you don't put like little free boxes or manuals in there?
We do. Sometimes collector's edition stuff will come in.
Oh.
Like the box will come in and there won't be a game. And those will immediately go in. So like Call of Duty Ghosts boxes.
Need a favor to ask you.
Yeah. What do you got?
Yeah. What? If you have a couple of Super Mario Brothers original manuals laying around, you do somewhere.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, just pick them up for me. I'll give you a buck or two for them.
Okay.
Because when I opened up my boxes, there wasn't a couple in the couple of boxes.
Really?
Yeah, I was surprised.
Okay.
Because I went through the three. That's all, Ian. That's my request.
Just
your yeah. I was going to ask you something like bad.
I never know with you.
What, you're going to ask you to like kick the shit out of someone for me?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like a certain... Dev?
You want me to go lay some muscle down?
Put the boots to someone?
Put the boots to someone. Play their spine like an accordion.
That I don't think you've ever given me that yet. Yeah. That was like scared Ian. Yeah, I like it. I feel the power of that. Yeah.
Gross. All right. So, onwards.
All right. We got a Q&A time on the CU podcast. This is from at Warren Larson 97.
All right. Let's do it, Warren.
A discussion about NES values. Values 10 years from now would be interesting. To look at common games like the Mario Brothers, and then maybe some rare examples and get your thoughts on where prices will be. Well, we talked about this before, but Ian,
I feel like I got to leave this one. I can't fucking speculate 10 years in advance. Every 3 weeks, speculation becomes different. We got fucking dudes with more money to spend than they can't.
But they're buying sealed games and high-end boxes.
But whatever. I don't know.
They're not buying carts.
I don't know.
10 years from now, I'm going to go record. I'd say, and I've said this before, 75% to 80% of the library will be closer to Atari 2600 level.
Sure. I can agree with that.
It's going to trend down.
I don't think it's ever going to get to 2600 level for a few reasons. But
there's already dollar NES games, just how many they're going to be.
Sure, I don't think there's going to be that many.
There'll be a couple hundred. I'll say there'll be a couple hundred. There'll be other games that trend downwards, but there'll be a couple hundred NES games in 10 years that'll be a dollar.
What I'm getting at is I don't think you're going to see all of them just haphazardly thrown on the shelf. $2. No.
Oh, no. You will for, I think, a chunk of them. You're going to see...
No, what I'm saying for, like, the entire library.
No. The entire library isn't in the dollar bin, but a chunk of it is.
The majority.
The common popular ones are.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to get like that with, like, Super Mario Brothers 3, but will it be $15... 10 years from now? Probably not. I can't see it keeping that value. There's too many of them out there. The prices, I think, are going to regress to where they were before this started heating up 10 years ago. They're going to get back down to 2006, maybe pre-2006 levels. When Pat was in college, you know, you had a lot of the uncommon games were still $2, $3. You know, like, what the hell is that one? That Conquest of the Crystal Palace. That was like a $3, $4 game, and that's an uncommon game.
Yeah,
years ago, I'm talking about.
Mine for $2.99 at Funko, the only time I ever went to Funko.
Yeah, I think that's where we'll just say 2004 prices. It won't be like 97.8 prices where you couldn't give the games away. But we'll just say like before the pre Wii prices, I think we're going to get to a lot of them. Now, the question is for the rare stuff that people are holding on to. The people that decided they're going to, you know, this happened, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago when people said, I want every NES game. I'm going to spend whatever amount of money I will within a year and a half to get it. We know someone that did that and sold all their stuff that we just saw at Comic-Con, for example. Those people that spend $800, $900, $1,000 for Little Samson, will they let those games go for under what they paid for? Or will they hold on to them until they're dead? That's the question. Because if they hold on to them until they're dead, then those prices will stay at that level. But if they start to get rid of them just to get rid of them, those prices will crash. I'm not saying it'll be $100, but they'll crash to half the value, maybe two-thirds of the value. So that the $1,000 Little Samson might be a $500 Little Samson in like 5, 6 years when people realize, I got to get something back for this.
Well, and that's,
you know.
You look around at conventions, and you can see in some of these sellers' eyes, they're determined. No, this is what it's worth. This is what I'm asking for it. And this is also why you've seen it at my booth every year for the past 4 years.
Yeah.
And no one wants it. At some point, you have to give. There is a mentality in collecting that I really, really hate.
You hate me?
I would say it's almost more prevalent in something like pinball. You see it in cars, but it's also in retro games. People
protective.
I just want to get what I put into it back. Yeah. No, you don't. That's not how it works. You don't get to get what you put back. I mean, you can try, but like I said, in pinball, it happens a lot where it's like, oh, you know, I bought this system, you know, I bought this, you know, this firepower for 400, but to get it working again, I needed to put another 400 in it. So now it's, you know, so I, or say they need to put more than that in. Say they needed to put, a, you know, enough in it, it brings it up to 1,000. But at least at the time, a firepower was maybe an $800 machine. Sure. I'm not paying you $1,000 no. when I can wait 2 weeks and find a perfectly working or, a, you know, a good enough firepower for the price it's supposed to get. I'm sorry you put more into your machine than you should have, but I'm not paying you for that.
No.
And people do, and it's like,
I don't get to, like, say you're selling a house
yeah.
and the roof is going to collapse. I don't get to charge the roof repair when that's required to sell the house. Right. You know, I pay for that, not the person
anyways,
buying it.
Again, we're kind of sliding off, but my whole point is a lot
the
of
roof?
These people... Yes, sliding off the roof. A lot of people bought these expensive NES games, and they paid a lot for them, and they're fighting tooth and nail this decline in
They bought
value.
At the peak.
Yeah.
They all bought at the peak.
Which is a horrible idea.
Because they all got it in the same time. You want to say 2012-13 was when it really picked up... 2012-13 around there, maybe 14 for sure.
I would say 2010 was when we started noticing a lot of it at the store, but I think
I'm talking about when like the Little Samson and that stuff started spiking.
Sure.
That was like 12-13-ish when that went from like a $600 game, $500, like it just shot up.
Because
everyone was buying them. And then sellers were then getting them to, you know, the shell game started, the pyramid scheme started at that point. And when you go to a convention, this is going to be big because this has happened. You talked about like seeing Earthbound's not selling at Portland. I saw one to me was seeing, I think, like The Adventures of Batman and Robin. It's like a hard to find Super Nintendo game. It's a good game. No one bought it the whole time. I ended up getting it with a trade at the end of the weekend. I think it was last year or 2 years ago. This, I want to see how many people are selling Little Samsons and Dinosaur Peaks at this Portland. Because the conventions I go to recently, people aren't like clamoring with $1,000 in cash to buy Little Samsons anymore.
No,
I think we're done with that.
Remember the dude I don't always go to too many games, but nice kid, long blonde hair, younger, but he was like buying the Little Samsons and bringing them and showing them to us. He had an accent. He sounded like
Lasher?
No, I mean, we've seen him. You would know him in an instant if
okay.
you saw him. But he was buying, like, the one year he bought a Little Samson there box, and he showed it to us, and he always asks me to, like, can you look at it and see if
it's
legit
real.
And stuff
okay.
like that. I don't think we're getting people like that anymore who are running to these conventions to drop their money. I don't know if anyone's going to a convention looking for a Little Samson anymore. Whereas that was probably a thing that was done
like 4 or 5 years ago.
A lot people would go and they're I want to find a Little Samson. I want to find a Flintstone.
Those games became weird status symbols. You're not a real NES collector. Gatekeeping again, we love it. Mm-hmm. Where you're not a real collector until that was facetious, by the way. You're not a real collector unless you have a Little Samson. Unless you have a Dinosaur Peak.
Right.
I don't know why it's always those two games, but it is. What does Little Samson go for right now? And if they're actually moving? I mean, how many people are still trying to complete their NES collections that would have this? Let's see. But the whole point is this, is that those games is a different issue because those games have, like, value. They have equity put into them. There's equity people think they are holding with those games.
Yes.
The games that have no equity, the 70 to 80% of games, and the weird, uncommon, and rare games like the Color Dreams games, those games I don't think are going to hold any sort of weight 10 years from now.
It's a stupid example, but it's one I use simply because it was the most recent. But Supercars. Supercars is stupidly uncommon. And when I get it in, it doesn't move at like 15. No one cares. Like, we try to get some of the money, you know, for it, but you like 15, 20, you can't move that game anymore.
There are right now on eBay... 10 authentic Little Samsons for sale, North American. Buy it now is our best offer. There's two are complete for $3,500. Then there's $1,500 one, $1,200 cart. There's one being bid on right now, two bids with a day left, 2 days left at $670, free advertising to them. We'll see where that ends up there.
That's going to be the interesting one.
There's only two bids on it.
Yeah. Well, to me, it seems like, especially with expensive stuff, I've realized a lot of the bidding doesn't happen until the last day.
Sure, but I just think that's interesting. I'm sure there's are people that wanted to complete their collection, but I just think there's less and less of them now. Because those buy it nows, I think, would have been hit. Like, so how many have actually sold, Pat? That's the question. here. But yeah, but when we're talking about like full shelves of those games, I don't think most of the sports games will be above a dollar or two. There's no way. Because yeah. there are dollar games now. A lot of the bases loaded ones, you can't move them. No one wants them. I think a lot of the average platformers, action platformers, a Ninja Gaiden, there's way too many of them. People have them. They'll want them 10 years from now. I don't think that can be more than a $3 or $4 game. I just don't. I can't see it. I don't see it. You would have got it within the next. You would have had it by now. You would have had it to play it on the original console. There's gonna be less and less original console players over the next 10 years. It's just gonna decline. People are more or just flash carts are coming more and more.
I still have NES shoppers, but I don't think I have NES collectors so much anymore, if that makes
people
sense.
People aren't going for every single title.
I do have people who come in and look, and they do, you know, and they're still into it. But a lot of the people who come in now to buy Nintendo stuff, it's back to, I don't know, what I used to call day trippers, you know, or the weekend warriors. They buy it. They buy a handful of the popular games, and they go home and they have fun with friends for a weekend. I'm back to selling most of my Nintendo stuff literally to people who are like, my brother's coming into town. I'm going out of town. My girlfriend and I want to play Mario. Like, that's just...
But you're not... Let's just show off the special edition third print run is going to be in stock soon. You can order at ultimatenes.com. Limited to 500. Oh, that was weird. Something like... I'll just put this out here. Something like... I turned to The Adventures of Tom Sawyer and Rocky and Bullwinkle. Those will be $2 games. They're getting close to them right now. They're not...
Fuck yeah, 3 stars on Tom Sawyer.
That's right. That's where you're trying to reel in your nostalgia just a bit. You want to give it 4 there. But a game like Goal 2... That's now like a $25 game. That's going to plummet. That's a game you only want if you want the entire set. There's no one clamoring to play Gold 2 right away, you know, or Ghost Lion. Like, these are games that, again, these are going to be in the, let's say $2 NES bin 5 years from now. I won't even say 10 years from now. I'll say 5.
All right. Time to move our old person armchairing on to the next question.
Sure. All right, this is from at Dad Ass is my boss. Wow.
What up, Ass? Good to see you again.
All right.
Don't lose that title. You're coming in swinging again.
The goat hasn't had one in a while. It's like Brady not winning a Super Bowl for 5 years.
This is a good one, though. His arm's looking good today.
It's not dropping off the cliff like Max Kellerman said three years ago?
No.
Great. Give Brady more motivation. He's already a nut. Anyway... We hear the constant complaint about too many movie sequels and remakes, yet it seems there are far less complaints about video game sequels and remakes. Not only is the umpteenth Zelda sequel on its way, but it is also expected and welcomed. Why do you think that is?
So I think the big difference between movies and TV shows, sequels, getting remakes, and video games is this. Movies, if you have access to streaming... Let's say Netflix, or let's just say you had an infinite amount of streaming. You can watch the old version of the movie and the new version of the movie using the exact same equipment. If it's been re-released, it's just as available as the re-release of the movie. You can watch it. With video games, a lot of these re-releases are taking... classic, like, games that were really good from a prior generation or a couple generations before, remaking them or just upscaling them and putting them on new systems. From a light preservation angle, this is a good thing because, unlike movies, I can't play all games from old systems on a current system. So it's really... I think it reinvigorates people to go back and play these classics. People who might have wanted to play a game but never got a chance to. Some people aren't going to go and grab a Game Boy Color and Zelda Link's Awakening and play it. Now they have that chance to play it again.
Ease of accessibility is one of your...
Ease of accessibility.
Sure.
And that's the big thing.
And technology improving.
So I think a lot of people get upset about video game remakes because, yes, it's double dipping.
You mean movie remakes?
No, game remakes.
People do. Okay.
I think sometimes when people complain about games, because I've also seen people complain about this. His viewpoint on it isn't quite mine in terms of what I've heard and seen. People look at it as double dipping and stuff like that sometimes. If the game doesn't look, you know, much better, if there's still control issues or something, they get upset with it. But buy it if you want to, don't if you don't want to. I don't think this sort of stuff, like a full remake like Link's Awakening, that's some effort, that's some time. But like when they re-released the upscaled HD versions of Shadow of Colossus and Ico for the PS3, you know, that probably didn't take a lot of team resources. So you're not losing games that could be made by people doing this, and you're preserving that game and keeping it, you're kicking it along so people can keep playing it without having to go backwards. With movies, well, you got the remake and hopefully it's good, but you could also just go rent, download, buy the original movie.
Okay. So you have a different take, a different spin than I do. These are entirely different mediums, entertainment mediums. One is interactive, one is not.
Sure.
So for movies, when I watch the original, the best example for why remakes are bad is Psycho.
Yeah.
That's like the worst example and best example. Because they did the Psycho remake in the 90s. They did the remake. It was like a shot-for-shot remake of it. There's no reason for that experience to have to exist if you have the original. You're not getting that much more.
That's what I'm trying to say. Because it's not hard to get at either. You have the original. It's not hard to get at.
No. But this is different, though. Games are interactive.
Yes.
Gaming, when you play a game, is different than when I play a game. It's always different. So therefore, even when a remake is done, they can change that. That's a different interactive experience. When you're watching a movie that's remade, the amount of different enjoyment you could possibly get out of it is different. Because when you game, your experience is so much different than watching the movie. The movies are watching the same exact story, ends the same amount of time, we see the same explosions, we hear the same music, we see the same actor's performance. It's all the same. There's just less versatility. There's a lot more versatility in games. So I think that's why it's more forgiven as well.
Sure.
And when you update a movie and remake it, you're doing a lot less revising on it. I mean, the script is mostly the same. The pacing and tone is mostly the same on it.
So would you say that remakes are particularly good for games that have not aged well?
Anyway, Ian, but when you watch, say they remade Infinity War 20 years from now, for whatever reason, there'll be different actors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the effects somehow will be better, even though I think, talking to my CG guy, we're getting to peak CG. We are somewhat close to... We're close to photorealism right now. We're basically there. The experience won't be that much different than what I could have got out of it 20 years ago in the crappy 2018-19 version.
Honestly, in a lot of remakes, I feel game remakes, that's the same too. A lot of these don't really add anything.
They're not remaking the graphics.
And sometimes it's just a straight up re-release.
That's another good reason. Okay, so the accessibility, like you said, is one thing.
It's accessibility. That's the one thing. Whereas I don't disagree with a lot of what you're saying, other than I do think it applies for both games and movies. But it's just the accessibility. Whereas in an ideal world, movie is accessible both ways. Whereas with games, you kind of need that remake.
But the interactivity, we're not talking about sequels at all. Like, why are sequels okay? Well, usually when you get to Rocky IV, it becomes a joke. With games, the interactivity keeps it, I think, fresh as well. You can do a lot more with a game versus a movie, retreading the same plot with the same actor. How many times can you retell the same Rocky story? Well, now you can do it 7 times. We have 7 Rocky movies at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Actually, we've had 8. We've had 8 Rocky movies now. Hey, the last 3 have been good. The 2 Creeds and the Rocky Balboa have been good.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so I was like 5.
There were 6 original Rockies.
And then I forgot the other Rocky.
Yeah, so it gets tougher, though. Once you get to Friday the 13th Part 5, it gets tougher to retell basically the same story again. With games, when people are interacting, they make their own story, their own experience. To me, it's the difference between you're creating your own experience versus experiencing one made for you. If that's the simplest way I could do it. Okay.
Hey, look at the screen real quick.
Okay. All right. Last question. I was
this is from Brandon Vem. I'm asking this to Pat. How would Pat end Pat the NES Punk if he decided not to do it anymore?
Wow. Okay. I thought about this a couple of times. If it would be good to not let it linger, if I had to let it linger,
If
I had to let it linger.
Please.
It'd be better just to go out with, like, a final, like, sort of season pack of, like, hey, I'm going to do 10 episodes.
A Netflix drop.
Not a drop, but, like, if I did, like, a 10-episode thing where once a week you put one out for 10 weeks versus having it, well, I do 2 1 year, one another. That's probably how I would do it and say, sure, get all the rest of my ideas out. The only problem is to do that would require a chunk of time and actually money to have to produce it and to get help to do it. But that's what I would do. I write out like 10 scripts, maybe have an overarching plot, probably because I go over the top with that. You know, bring back maybe a couple people for final appearances. Maybe the evil game store owner, maybe Frank, maybe
kill me off.
I can kill you off in real life if you want me to. You know, just do that. Bring back Denise. Donkey, you know, but do it like a final send off. Like, here's the final Pat, the final 10 episodes, and then just do it like that, and that's it.
Pat the NES Punk, the miniseries.
The final season. Have me fight someone near the waterfall, and we both get tossed off. You know, we can do that. Sherlock Holmes reference. You humanoids.
You'll be despondent, you won't know what to do anymore, and we'll just take a video of you wandering around the zoo, and you fall in the lion pit, and Pat the NES Punk is gone.
That's how it ends?
Yes.
At the San Diego Zoo? Would there be a market for that? Do like the final 10 episodes? Maybe. That's what I thought about, because as I'm getting older, I'm not going to be doing, you know, I'm not going to be like, you know, when the Three Stooges got to be 70 years old, and at that point they should have hung it up, you know, 15 years ago. It was like pathetic at that point. And I love the Three Stooges, but just stop. You can't do the same thing for like 50 years in a row. You gotta move on. Unless you're the Three Stooges, that's what you want to do. But I'm just saying, I don't want to be the Three Stooges. I don't want to do it. That's not for me. But yeah, but there is one that's got to be edited still. I'll do one more at least this year. There'll be three episodes this year. The one that came out in January, then two others this year, probably. And then next year, we'll see with that. So is that it for the CU Podcast? How would you want to see? You really want to see me get thrown to the lions, literally or figuratively?
Nah, it was just a joke.
Avgra going to come back? The Online Video Game Reviewer Association? No. All right, that's it.
Oh, so many possibilities.
That's it for this CU Podcast. Hit that subscribe button. Smash it on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you listen to the podcast. Smash it. Again, I'll be at Missouri Game Con this weekend, and then the following weekend with Ian, August 10th and 11th, at Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. And we will be there with Rocco the Wonder Dog. I think Rocco's going to show up. I was like, yes! And we'll go to Friendly's and maybe get some pizza.
All right, so...
with our friends.
For Pat Contry, I'm Ian Ferguson. We'll see you someday.